Today is December 31st, 2018, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Bertel in Washington. Coming up, a key Republican says President Trump is considering a new plan for withdrawing U.S. troops in Syria. As the year comes to an end, we'll check the status of the U.S.-Russia probe.
President Trump remains adamant that no evidence has surfaced of collusion between his 2016 campaign and Russia.
And New Year's Eve celebrations are underway around the world. We'll take a look at the centerpiece of the festivities in New York City's Times Square. It's all on today's International Edition. U.S. President Donald Trump's decision earlier this month to rapidly withdraw U.S. troops from Syria drew criticism from both political parties and a number of world leaders. But his plan might have changed. Joining me now is VOA White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Swara. Patsy, thank you for joining us. Has the president shifted his strategy in Syria?
Well, I wouldn't call it so much shifting, but perhaps we see already that there are indications that his promise to withdraw from Syria now or immediately may not happen as quickly as he said. As we know, yesterday, a key senator from the Republican Party, Lindsey Graham, met with the president at the White House. And afterwards, he came out and said to reporters that we are in a pause situation where we are reevaluating what's the best way forward. And in his tweet this morning as well, President Trump seems to confirm that we are slowly sending our troops back home while at the same time fighting ISIS remnants. And there have also been statements from Departments of State, Department of Defense, National Security Advisor John Bolton, saying that the administration is working with key partners to coordinate a safe withdrawal of U.S. troops. So from these indications, we see that the pullout will be done in a more slowly and more coordinated and thoughtful manner than what appeared to have been promised before by the president.
Well, shifting from Syria to the partial U.S. government shutdown, in an interview published Sunday, outgoing White House Chief of Staff John Kelly said the president abandoned the idea of a concrete wall along the border with Mexico. Instead, he was talking about border security when referencing the wall. How has President Trump reacted to that?
Well, the president tweeted this morning that the concrete wall was, in all capital letters, never abandoned. So he tweeted that some areas will be all concrete, but experts at Border Patrol prefer a wall that is see-through, making it possible to see what's happening on both sides. Makes sense to me. That was his tweet this morning. So, yes, you're right that John Kelly, who is leaving the administration very soon, by the way, he did say yesterday in an interview that the president still says wall or barrier or fencing or steel slat, but the administration has actually left the idea of solid concrete wall very early on. So this terminology issue for the wall is a very touchy subject for the president. And as we know, Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi even goaded the president, saying that his cement wall has turned into a beaded curtain. So this is certainly an issue that will continue ahead as we talk not just about the funding, but also the terminology or just what kind of wall it will be.
Well, whether it's concrete or a beaded curtain, it certainly is the centerpiece of discussions between congressional Democrats and the president in reopening the government. Where do things stand?
Well, nothing much, really. There's not much movement for the past couple of days. It's still at an impasse, still at a stalemate. The president has been tweeting all morning about on this. We suspect that he's watching a lot of television where there are interviews with Democrats making references to that all morning. And he's also saying that I'm in the Oval Office. Democrats come back from vacation now and give us the votes necessary for border security, including the wall. So what we'll actually see in the next couple of days is the House Democrats, is the Democrats taking over the House of Representatives, and they already have plans to release a spending bill that would continue existing levels of border funding without giving the president any of the new wall money that he's asking for.
All right, Patsy. Well, thank you as always for your insight into what is happening at the White House. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
This is Science in a Minute. NASA reports that its New Horizons spacecraft is in good shape and on its final approach to its New Year's Day flyby of a Kuiper Belt object called 2014 MU69 or Ultima Thule. The spacecraft that provided scientists with in-depth information and high-resolution images of the dwarf planet Pluto is getting ready to conduct an historical first-ever close-up exploration of a Kuiper Belt object. NASA says New Horizons is expected to fly within 3,500 kilometers of Ultima Thule's surface at 0533 UTC on January 1st, 2019. The space agency says the flyby of the trans-Neptunian object will also be the farthest exploration of any world ever. The spacecraft will map Ultima Thule as well as determine its surface composition, how many moons it has, and if it has rings or even an atmosphere. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Among the top stories in the world, at least three people are dead and three others injured in a gas explosion in Russia. Two are dead and dozens are wounded in a bombing of a busy shopping mall in the Philippines. Ballot counting continues in the Democratic Republic of Congo after Sunday's elections. The Vatican spokesman and his deputy resigned suddenly Monday amid an overhaul of the Vatican's communications operations. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Russia's domestic security agency says it has arrested a U.S. citizen on espionage charges. A State Department spokesperson says the United States is aware of the detention. AP's Zaria Shakely has more.
The Federal Security Service, the top KGB successor agency, said that the American man was detained in Moscow on Friday. The agency said in a statement that he was caught during an espionage operation but didn't give any details. The state TASS news agency identified the detained man as Paul Whelan. Spying charges carry a prison sentence of up to 20 years in Russia. The U.S. Embassy in Moscow had no immediate comment. I'm Zaria Shakli.
And turning now to Asia, election officials in Bangladesh say an alliance led by Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina won a huge majority, clearing the way for her to serve a third straight term, while opponents rejected the result. Reuters' Emily Wither reports.
There was swift condemnation of the arrest of two Canadians by the European Union.
In deadly elections in Bangladesh, Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina's alliance has won a thumping majority, handing her a third straight term in a vote that the opposition rejected as rigged. At least 17 people were killed as the voting took place. It came after a violent campaign, during which the opposition alleged the government denied it a level playing field. The win has consolidated Hasina's decade-long rule over the country. She's credited with improving the economy and promoting development, but has also been accused of rampant human rights abuses and a crackdown on media, charges she denies. The main opposition, Bangladesh Nationalist Party, which boycotted the last poll in 2014, won just six seats. There are 298 up for grabs. One of Hasina's first tasks after she takes office could be to raise minimum wages for workers in Bangladesh's massive garments industry. It's the world's second biggest after China. The opposition leader is calling on the Election Commission to order a fresh vote under a neutral administration. His candidates are reported witnessing ballot stuffing and vote rigging by ruling party activists. He also claims they barred opposition polling agents from voting centres. The Election Commission says it's investigating allegations of vote rigging from across the Muslim-majority country.
Australia has issued a statement raising concerns about China's detention of two Canadian citizens after foreign policy experts questioned why Canberra had been silent. The arrests earlier this month came after Canada detained a Huawei executive in Vancouver at the request of the United States. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
There was swift condemnation of the arrest of two Canadians by the European Union, Britain, Germany and France. They were concerned about the apparent political motivation of their detention. China accused Michael Spavor and Michael Kovrig of endangering state security. Despite the international outcry, Australia, another of Canada's key Western allies, stayed silent. There was no official explanation, but a group of 30 academics and former diplomats signed a petition urging Canberra to call for the pair to be freed. Rory Medcalf, the head of the National Security College at the Australian National University, says Australia must stand shoulder to shoulder with Canada.
That if middle-sized democracies don't stand together against offensive behaviour by China on the international stage, then one by one we will be subjected to similar punishment or bullying on those occasions when our interests clash with China.
In response, Australia's Foreign Minister Maurice Payne has issued a brief statement which doesn't back Canada's call for the two men to be immediately released.
The Australian government is concerned about the recent detention of two Canadian citizens in China. We would be very concerned if these cases were related to legal proceedings currently underway in Canada involving a Chinese citizen, Ms. Meng Wanzhou.
China is Australia's biggest trading partner, but relations have soured in recent times over allegations that Beijing has meddled in Australia's domestic politics, while Canberra has accused China of cyber espionage. Earlier this month, Australia said its companies were among the global victims of an extensive campaign of cyber espionage attacks backed by the Chinese government. Canberra said cybercrime had the potential to undermine global economic growth, national security, and international stability. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
From Australia, we head back to Washington. The Russian investigation led by Special Counsel Robert Mueller gained momentum during 2018 with guilty pleas and convictions targeting former associates of President Donald Trump. The probe could be headed for an epic climax in 2019, as we hear from VOA national correspondent Jim Malone.
There was a parade of former key Trump associates in and out of court in connection with the Russia probe during 2018. Among them, former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, former campaign manager Paul Manafort, and the president's former personal lawyer Michael Cohen. Even as the investigation appears to intensify, President Trump remains adamant that no evidence has surfaced of collusion between his 2016 campaign and Russia.
On the Mueller situation, we're very happy with what we are reading because there was no collusion whatsoever. There never has been. The last thing I want is help from Russia on a campaign.
Opposition Democrats remain poised to defend the investigation led by Special Counsel Robert Mueller, including Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer.
They should not be able to end it. They should not be able to limit it. They should not be able to interfere with Mueller going forward and doing what he thinks is the right thing.
Trump's former lawyer, Michael Cohen, has emerged as a key figure in the investigation, says legal expert Doug Spencer.
What's happened since Michael Cohen has been cooperating with Robert Mueller is a lot more information related to the campaign. The first thing that we learned about were campaign finance violations, potentially, with payments from President Trump's campaign to women who were alleging affairs with him.
With the flurry of court activity since the midterm election, the Mueller probe may be building toward a climax, says Jim Kessler.
So we're now getting the big fish, people like Flynn, people like Roger Stone, Michael Cohen, the president's personal lawyer, who are either turned on the president or are on the hot seat. So the next 60 days should be very, very interesting, but it doesn't look like good news for the president.
Trump's Republican supporters are urging the probe wind up quickly, including Senator John Kennedy.
We do need to wrap it up. It's been, 17 months now, and the American people are entitled to know what happened and who, if anybody, broke the law.
The Russia probe may come to a legal conclusion in 2019, but it may be up to Congress to deal with the aftermath, possibly through impeachment, says legal analyst Rick Simmons.
The real ultimate question is a political one. depending on what is in this report, what is the political fallout, both with the American people and with Democrats, but especially Republicans in Congress.
Whatever comes out of the Russia probe could have a major political impact in 2019, as both President Trump and a large group of potential Democratic contenders look ahead to the 2020 election. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Thank you, Jim. And this is VOA's International Edition.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the Voice of America.
Thanks for joining me today for VOA's International Edition. Over the past year, millions of children in conflict have faced life-threatening situations and been subjected to gross human rights violations. The UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, urges world leaders to do more to protect children in crisis and hold perpetrators accountable. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Violence and insecurity have forced more than 28 million children from their homes in 2018. The UN Children's Fund says it has responded to more than 300 emergencies to help children caught in many of the 40 armed conflicts raging around the world. UNICEF says children are tortured, raped, used as human shields or suicide bombers, recruited as child soldiers, and subjected to a myriad of other atrocities by armed groups. While fighting has killed and maimed tens of thousands of children, UNICEF says many more have died from the indirect consequences of conflict rather than the war itself. For instance, it notes a child dies of preventable diseases every 10 minutes in Yemen, the world's worst humanitarian crisis. President and CEO of UNICEF USA, Carol Stern, tells VOA, food insecurity has caused the rate of severe acute malnutrition to rise, with one in four children around the world being malnourished.
For example, the Central African Republic, there's been such a dramatic resurgence in the fighting there. And most of the country is part of it now. So two out of three kids are in need of humanitarian assistance in CAR right now. And 43,000 children below age five, they're projected to face an extremely elevated risk of death due to severe acute malnutrition.
UNICEF reports escalating fighting and attacks on schools and teachers in Cameroon and in the border regions of Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger have deprived millions of children of an education. Similarly, it says ongoing conflict in the Lake Chad Basin is putting the education of 3.5 million children at risk. Stern says sexual violence against women and girls is being used as a weapon of war in many conflicts.
In northeast Nigeria, where you have armed groups, including the Boko Haram, they continue to target girls. This is including rape. This is forced to become wives of fighters. They're used as human bombs. I mean, really what's going on there is just horrific.
Stern says children are abused in all countries and regions of conflict, in Afghanistan, in Myanmar, in Iraq, in Syria, eastern Ukraine, and Central America. She says children are victimized by political leaders who use them as pawns to push a political agenda.
The border of our own country, the various different things that are happening around the world, Bangladesh and Myanmar, we have to separate the issue of politics from the issues that surround children.
Stern says children are not migrants. They are not refugees. They are not Somalia's children or Yemen's children or Syria's children or Rohingya children. She says they are children, first and foremost. Stern says there is nothing political about saving the life of a child. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Kenya has recently declared giraffes as critically endangered and launched a recovery plan to fight habitat loss, poaching, and disease. VOA's Mariama Diallo reports.
The giraffe population in Kenya has dropped 40% in the last 30 years, according to Charles Musyoki, acting director general for Kenya's Wildlife Service.
The Rothschild giraffes in particular, we have only 659 remaining. And there are only two countries in Africa that have Rothschild giraffes, Kenya and Uganda. And I think the largest proportion of those giraffes is actually in Kenya.
He says the country's recovery plan would address all the factors causing the population decline.
We are engaging with landowners so that we can have a sort of integrated land use program that is going to ensure that even as we pursue other land uses, we secure key habitats for giraffes. We want to be very keen in our anti-poaching programs. We are very keen at looking at infrastructure developments, because most of the infrastructure developments that are taking place are basically encroaching on habitats for giraffes.
At the Giraffe Center in Nairobi, ecotourist Cody Heyman laments what's happening to the giraffe population.
These are beautiful animals. You know, I love giraffes. I love all wildlife. I find it very sad that they're on the endangered list. I hope efforts will be fruitful in keeping them alive and keep taking them off that list.
Conservationists at the Bristol Zoo in southwest England stress they are in a race against time to save the species.
There is a very good chance that we've been seeing a massive decline for a long time, and we just haven't been paying enough attention to them, unfortunately. So giraffe as a whole, there's about 80,000 remaining, which is even less than African elephants.
She says that giraffes, as grazers, are an important part of the ecosystem. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
New Year's Eve celebrations ringing in the new year are underway around the world. Later tonight, a group of journalists will usher in the new year in New York City's Times Square as the time-honored tradition of the annual ball drop recognizes journalism and free speech. New York Mayor Bill de Blasio expects up to 2 million people in Times Square to watch the huge, brilliantly lit crystal ball drop. It's an American New Year's tradition that goes back more than a century. As VOA's Kevin Enochs reports, a lot of work goes into making sure that ball lights up the sky in spectacular fashion, exactly on time.
Each one of these triangle crystal panels contains hundreds of red, blue, and green LED lights. That's a grand total of 32,000 lights. Once they're lit on New Year's Eve, perched on the roof of One Times Square, the ball can be seen well beyond Times Square as it drops for the countdown to 2019. The whole event is a complicated engineering project.
When you hold this up right here, you can actually see, I mean, look at the light refracting off this here. I mean, these are cut on both sides. And behind us, you will have 2,688 crystal panels. And each year, we replace 192 of those panels with the new theme. And at the end of a 10-year series, you will have a patchwork quilt of beautiful human emotions, of global sentiments, all represented on the famous Waterford Crystal Times Square ball.
The LEDs are programmable. That's what allows celebration organizers to turn the ball into a versatile light display that changes every year.
So one of the ways the design theme of Gift of Harmony is being celebrated is really by this beautiful design on the Waterford Crystal, which is now being installed, because every year we update a certain number of the crystals, and this year the theme is the Gift of Harmony.
It's a complicated process, but one that has a simple goal, according to Tom Brennan from Fiskars Living, the company that owns the ball.
Really what it is that we're celebrating with the world. I mean, there's 1.2 billion people around the world watching this, and each year we introduce a new theme, a new crystal pattern, and this year is the Gift of Harmony.
Here's to a good year. Kevin Enochs, VOA News.
And wishing you a happy new year, and to our studio crew, director Dan Brown and engineer John Dryden, and I'm Jim Bertel in Washington, wishing you a very, very happy new year.